Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we have Chris DeSantis, an independent organizational behavior practitioner, speaker, podcaster, and author with over 35 years of experience working with clients and professional services firms. Over the past 15 years, he's been invited to speak on generational issues in the workplace at hundreds of the leading U.S. law and accounting firms, as well as many of the major insurance and pharma companies. His new book is Why I Find You Irritating, Navigating Generational Friction at Work. You gotta love it. Looking forward to hearing some details here. And Mr. DeSantis, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you very much, Eric. I appreciate you having me.
Well, I certainly appreciate your time and your joining us here today. Looking forward to hearing from you as well. So tell us, for starters, what makes this book different than other books on the topic?
Sure. Well, I started on this topic about 18 years ago, and then at that time I started reading background information on the topic. So I've sort of put about 60 or so of these books under my belt. And so what I tried to do is tried to find the space where some of these issues weren't addressed or were not elaborated on. And so I think what distinguishes my book to some degree is I get away from these siloed categories, and I talk a little bit about how waves affect us. I think there are generational waves. I think the first first wave of a generation shapes the perception, and then the second wave has to live with under the auspices of those perceptions. I also then talk about the difference between perceptions and realities, because I think that's one of the challenges too, because we start naming people as a boomer. Oh, you must be this. And I don't think that's necessarily reflective of who they are. So, and then I have to explain, I hope to go on here a moment, Eric, but I had to explain about generalizations and why we stereotype and how that sort of is detrimental to sort of understanding each other. And then I further go on to talk a little bit about the difference between a generational lens, that means how you see the world and interpret the events, and the stage of life that you go through, which are six stages, and how that also affects you relative to the choices you make. So I talk about all of those things. I even throw in parental models, because I think we were raised differently. And when you raise a child differently, they interact differently as a consequence. So you put all that together and you've gotten yourself a different view.
I hear you on that. Now, what distinguishes stages of life from generational differences? I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yes, the generational lens really is, what did you experience in the early years of your life that shapes your view? So for instance, what was the socioeconomics around you? Now, no child knows if there's stagflation or inflation, but they do know if there's abundance or scarcity in the house. Remember the Depression and how that affected people after that. So when you have this worldview, and then also the events that you experience in your awakening years, and I use your childhood. Where were you when we landed on the moon, or 9/11, or the Challenger disaster? Those flashbulb memories. Then the third thing is, what were your friends saying, or the messages that you received from your parents at the dinner table? So all of those things contribute to a generational lens. And so in that sense, we see the world not objectively, but rather subjectively through our experiences. But the stages of life is, we all go through them, right? You were a child, a young adult, an emerging adult, adult, elder, and bonus elderhood. You go through these stages. So when we see a child, we don't always see them as a unique individual with their own view, but rather a younger version of ourselves. And that's where I think we are incorrect, because they have experienced things differently, and then they have a view that's different than our own. But we look at them as the younger version, which I think is to our detriment, especially in the workplace.
A lot of great points made there, and I'm sure you could go on and talk further and deeper into this, but some great information on the surface, no doubt. Now, you talk about feedback and performance appraisals in your book, and you don't care much for those. Why is that?
Well, I think feedback is not set up necessarily to enhance the performance of another, but rather to either vent your frustration or correct the performance in accordance to your opinion. You see, I think what we have is, we don't have a performance appraisal, we have an opinion of performance appraisals. And they are all really shaped by whoever has the majority view in the workplace. So if you are coming from a different place in terms of either younger or an identity difference in terms of diversity, you are subject to an interpretation of who you are relative to how they see you as opposed to objectively seeing you. So my problem with this is that you can give feedback on I will call them tactical skills. Do you add correctly? Do you subtract correctly? Are you a good programmer? Those kinds of things. But when you get to these abstract skills of, are you confident? Or do you make good decisions? Or use good judgment? So those abstractions are subject to our own biases. And I have a problem with that because, again, it has a lot to do with saying, am I actually helping you? Or am I actually saying, this is just who you should be relative to who I am? And that's, again, I go back to this notion of the whole goal here is to improve performance, and I don't think that the systems are in support of that. I also have some problems with commoditization of talent. Can I go on this just for a second, Eric? I'll use you as an example.
Please do.
I think your gift has a lot to do. I looked at your history, and you have a series of gifts. One is your background in marketing. One is your radio voice, and also the way you carry yourself on the radio in terms of the dialogues you have. Those are particular gifts. But if I'm judging you from a performance appraisal, I'll be looking at other things as well. Can you add and subtract? Can you present well to others? And I'm wondering, are those things critical to the success of who you are today? I don't think so. But if you spend too much time on those things, it'll detract from the real gifts of what you possess. So I think the future lies in identifying what is unique about you, Eric in particular, and saying, how do we leverage those strengths to maximum advantage? Right now, we don't have a system that does that.
Well, that is a great example, and even using myself in the mix there, no problem with that. Good stuff. Today, we're speaking with Chris DeSantis, an independent organizational behavior practitioner and author of his new book, which is Why I Find You Irritating, Navigating Generational Friction at Work, here on Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, tell me, what exactly is embracing lopsidedness?
Oh, yes. Well, that builds on what I've just said. The idea is, I think the work of the future, to a great degree, is not the individual contributor per se, but rather work is a team sport. And so in that sense, work is becoming more complex. And because of its complexity, no individual on the team could know everything. So what we become is more dependent on each other. And so I go back to the model. Look, if you have a team, and you are part of a team, I would suppose, part of the team is there's a production people that are really good at the details of the production. There are people like yourself who are really good at the interview itself. And then there's other people on your team who are the coordinators. My point is, everyone has certain areas of skill that are unique to who they are that could be contributed to the team. And if we allow for that, meaning if I only evaluate you on the areas of your maximum contribution, I think the team performs better. It also helps the team be less competitive with each other. You see, if we all evaluate each other on the same criteria, we become competitors to each other on our own team. Rather, if we evaluate the complementary skills, we become colleagues to each other and then more willing to help each other in the areas where I do not have that expertise. Thus, the notion of lopsidedness, that we are all lopsided and we should embrace that as opposed to being well balanced. So I make this point because the researchers showed if you have a team of all A players, they may not do as well as a high performing team when you have a team of people that have complementary skills. So part of this has to do with forming the team properly and then rewarding the team subsequent to that. Hope that helps.
It sure does, and I really appreciate your perspective on that as well. Now, how has mentoring changed over the years, and why are the young so bent on it?
Well, I'm more old school. You're younger than I was, but when I was growing up in the world of work, we didn't have assigned mentors. Mentors, in fact, the whole concept of mentoring was the afterthought, meaning that you never described somebody as your mentor to be, but rather upon reflection, you described you had a mentor. And the mentor was an organic experience. Now, what the young are actually saying to us is, look, and this is the Gallup research as well, saying, I want somebody who cares about me in the workplace, who is willing to develop me, who pays attention to my career. Now, those are all reasonable asks. So what we have done is we've launched into mentoring programs. The problem I have with a programmatic approach is that mentoring infers intimacy. And so if I'm going into an assigned arrangement, we're with an inferred intimacy, that could make one or both parties uncomfortable. Because the words have power. See, I'm not opposed to having an advisor program or a guidance or a shepherd, but I would move away from the terminology of mentor because it hasn't been earned yet. And that's an earned state over time. And I think if we start in a more easy place or an easier place, such as an advisor, then I think we move toward in the direction of mentorship. So, but I have no problem with the demands of the young because they're really asserting what they require to do well here. And so we are trying to give them that. We're just naming it incorrectly.
Lastly, Mr. DeSantis, what impact is the hybrid workplace having on the different generations? I'd like to hear you go into that a little bit here as we conclude today.
Yes, that's interesting because this is also, remember I talked about stages of life. Stages of life and habits also come into play. I, as a boomer, am in the habit of coming into the office. I'm an empty nester. So sitting at home is a different experience. Plus, my friends came from the office. So being there is part of the habit of who I am. Then you have these Gen Xers who are, to a great degree, much more independent. They're the only generation that really designed for a pandemic. They just moved from one space to the other. And so this sort of latchkey child who grew up into an independent adult has just accommodated the experience. They also have a stage of life issue that they have young kids at home possibly. So they are saying, yeah, this isn't bad. Now we move on to the young, the millennials and the Gen Z. Well, some of them say, this is a great release for me. And now I have great flexibility. So I expect that, especially the youngest, the Gen Z saying, well, for the first 2 years of my work, I worked at home. Why can't I continue to do this? The challenge with this in the hybrid workplace is learning requires observation. So in that sense, you have to be a part of the process. So what we're in the process right here is realigning ourselves as a nation, saying, where is it appropriate to be alone or independent, and where is it appropriate for the team to gather? And so we're still in this space of deciding how to do that. But each of us has our own perspective, and what we need to do is accommodate the needs and wants of each of those perspectives as opposed to deciding for the other.
And I'd say that's a perfect place to conclude. Really do appreciate all the insight and information shared here today, Mr. DeSantis. If listeners wanted to pick up the book, where could they best do so? Also, where could they get more information on the book as well as yourself?
Yes, my website is cpdesantis.com, and it also has a link to the book if you want to go to the publisher. But you can also find the book, Why I Find You Irritating, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble's website, or Books a Million. So they're all available. But thank you for allowing me to share that with people.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome. Our pleasure. Again, folks, for more details, visit cpdesantis.com. Mr. DeSantis, all the best. Thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you, Eric. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Certainly was my pleasure. We've been speaking with Chris DeSantis, an independent organizational behavior practitioner and author of his new book. It's Why I Find You Irritating, Navigating Generational Friction at Work. And again, for further details, visit cpdesantis.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.